Today, are central bankers becoming political animals? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. And this is our weekly market update, where we start in the US, go across to Europe, Asia, and Australia, and also cover crypto and commodities. It's been another wild week on the markets, actually, driven by conflicting data and a reactive Fed, who has effectively given up on forward guidance and who does not know where rates will go. But despite Powell's protests to the contrary, some are suggesting central bankers are being swayed by political considerations from driving rates higher to quash inflation. Apart from more strong big tech results this week, two events shaped the week, actually. It started with fears of higher rates and inflation driven by hot economic data, but turned after the Fed held rates and ruled out rate hikes, waiting for more data. Stubbornly high readings on inflation this year pushed the Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell to say on Wednesday that it will likely take longer than previously expected to get enough confidence about inflation to cut interest rates. But then, in a bad news is good news swing, the Friday jobs report came in softer than expected in April, a sign possibly that persistently high interest rates may be starting to take a bigger toll on the world's largest economy. The nation's employers added 155,000 jobs last month. That's down sharply from the blockbuster increase of 315,000 in March. And it was also well below the 233,000 jobs that economists had predicted. Despite the slowdown in jobs growth, the unemployment rate rose slightly to 3.9%, while average hourly earnings increased by 0.2% month over month, and that makes 3.9% year over year. That's the slowest pace of increase in almost 3 years. The labour force participation rate held steady at 62.7%, and the employment to population ratio remained little changed at 60.2%. So the market thinks that the Federal Reserve's aggressive streak of rate hikes may finally be cooling the pace of hiring. So then, could a soft landing be back on the cards? US Treasury yields, which had driven the 2-year above 5% earlier in the week, mostly fell following the jobs report. The yield on the 10-year Treasury, which lenders use as a guide for pricing home loans, eased to 4.509% from 4.59% late on Thursday. And the 2-year yield, which moves more closely with expectations for the Fed, fell to 4.806% from 4.88% previously. After coming into the year forecasting 6 or more rate cuts in 2024, traders now see November as the most likely timing for the first Fed rate cut based on interest rate futures prices, but that also gave nearly even odds that the first cut could come in September. And they've given a 24% chance that the Fed won't cut rates at all this year. That's down from 27% before the Fed meeting. The benchmark S&P 500, which has fallen by 4.2% in April, that's the first monthly loss since October, rose 1.26% on Friday to end the week at 5,127.79, while the Dow rose 1.18% to 38,675, and the Nasdaq was up 1.99% to 16,156. The US dollar was weaker, with the DXY down to 105.08, and the VIX was back down to 13.49. Technology stocks accounted for much of the rally on Friday, actually, with Apple jumping 5.97% after announcing a mammoth $110 billion stock buyback. The tech giant reported late on Thursday its steepest quarterly decline in iPhone sales since the outset of the pandemic. And Microsoft rose 2.22% and Nvidia added 3.46%. Several companies notched gains after reporting stronger earnings results, with Motorola, for example, 5% higher after the communications equipment maker raised its profit forecast for the year. But small cap stocks surged in the end of 2023 as expectations grew that the Fed had done raising interest rates and would soon begin easing monetary policy. That would have been a welcome change for smaller companies who rely more heavily on debt, financing, and consumer spending. but stubbornly strong inflation has eroded prospects of rate cuts this year, and small cap stocks have suffered as a result. The Russell 2000 is up just 0.4% year to date. That's far less than the S&P 500's 7.5% gain. Earnings are also expected to be shaky, giving investors little reason to shift allocations from larger companies to other less risky parts of their portfolios. The Russell 2000 is actually trading at a forward price to earnings ratio of 22, compared with 20 times earnings for the S&P 500, making small caps even more expensive. And the Russell 2000 was up just 1% on the day. European markets received a strong lead-in from Wall Street, supported by technology shares as positive news from Apple supported sentiment. However, there was a degree of caution ahead of the release of those key US employment data points. European indices have largely pulled back over the last month, with the German DAX and the French CAC 40 both dropping more than 2%, and the broader Stoxx 600 falling by more than 1%. Nevertheless, the Stoxx 600 was up 0.46% on Friday, while the DAX in Germany rose 0.54%, and the CAC 40 in France lifted 0.54% as well, and the UK FTSE was up 0.51%. The euro-US dollar traded 0.36% higher at 1.0763, while the pound was at 1.2547 against the dollar. Crédit Agricole stock rose 3.7% after France's second biggest listed bank posted a forecast-beating 55% jump in first-quarter net profit, helped by corporate and investment banking sales that outperformed rivals. And Société Générale stocks rose 5.3% as net income fell less than expected in the first quarter and as profits on equity derivative sales offset weaknesses in the retail bank of France's third biggest listed lender. On the flip side, Daimler Truck stock slumped 5.9% after the German automaker warned of a cooling market, even as it beat first quarter core profit expectations, driven by a strong performance of its truck's North American business. France's services PMI rose to 50.5% in April from 48.3% in the prior month, compared to market estimates of 48.9%. The latest reading pointed to the first expansion in France's services activity since May 2023. And in the UK, the S&P Global UK Services PMI jumped to 55 in April. That's from 53.1 in the earlier month, pointing to the sixth consecutive period of expansion at the sharpest pace in a year. So service providers enjoyed a sharp increase in new orders amid a turnaround in economic conditions for clients. Crude prices edged higher from near 7-week lows on Friday, but were still headed for steep losses this week as demand uncertainties stayed close by. And there was also robust US stockpiles and easing tensions in the Middle East. The US crude futures traded 1.22% lower at $77.98 a barrel, while the Brent contract dropped 1.04% to $82.83. Both benchmarks fell more than 5% actually, as investors worried about the prospects of higher for longer interest rates curbing growth in the US, of course, the top global oil consumer, and in other parts of the world. And further ahead, the next meeting of OPEC Plus oil producers is now set for June 1. Most Asian stocks rose on Friday, supported by technology shares, as positive earnings from Apple supported sentiment. Although regional market holidays and the anticipation of key US data did keep gains in check. And regional trading volumes were also dulled by holidays in Japan and China. Despite the holidays, the US dollar-Japan yen slipped below 153 on Friday morning. That's a 3-week low. And having lost over 4.5% from a peak of 60.2 at the start of trading on Monday. Behind the pair's rise is a long-term fundamental factor, a huge and widening interest rate differential with a shrinking trade surplus. Plus, Japan's central banks intervened on the back of the Fed meeting. The Nikkei was down a little in its last trading day too. Tech-heavy Asian exchanges were among the best performers for the day, with Hong Kong's Hang Seng up 1.48%. The index was also the best performer in Asia this week, as more stimulus measures in China, particularly in the real estate sector, greatly boosted property stocks as Beijing continued to roll out more monetary stimulus measures, while also loosening restrictions on investment, particularly in that beleaguered property sector, in order to try and help the economy grow. Chinese manufacturing activity grew slightly more than expected in April as the sector continued to benefit from that stimulus, although the reading still slowed from the prior month amid sustained headwinds for the Chinese economy. The official Manufacturing Purchases and Managers Index read 50.4 in April. That's according to data from the National Bureau of Statistics. The reading was slightly above expectations. The non-manufacturing PMI further pointed to slowing growth, though, with the index at 51.2 in April and slowing substantially from 53 in the prior month. And that saw the Chinese composite PMI fall to 51.7 in April from 52.7 in March. But China is still struggling with a sustained deflationary trend as consumer spending, a key driver of the economy, failed to pick up despite increased stimulus. Demand for Chinese exports also remained slow, further pressurizing local business output. And private manufacturing PMI data released on Tuesday also painted a slightly more optimistic picture for the sector. The KSEN manufacturing PMI rose to 51.4 in April, more than 51, which was expected, or 51.1 in the prior month. But that data point differs from the official reading in that it focuses more on smaller export-orientated private businesses. The official PMI, on the other hand, focuses on the big pool of larger state-owned companies. Elsewhere, South Korea's KOSPI slid 0.25%, while India's Nifty 50 index slid from a recent high earlier in the week and was down 0.76% amid caution over India's 2024 general elections. Gold futures rose slightly to $2,310 an ounce, but well off recent highs. But then again, strategists at Goldman Sachs believe there's even more upside room for the safe haven metal, saying it could potentially exceed $3,000 by the end of the year. And one of the primary drivers of this price rally is the continued strong demand for gold from global central banks and Asian households. To be clear, the geopolitical, fiscal, and financial outlooks and their exact impact on central bank gold demand and gold prices are all highly uncertain. But they said, that said, our exercise underscores the hedging value of gold against adverse geopolitical or financial scenarios in which equity bond portfolios would likely suffer. Now, in Australia, the benchmark S&P ASX 200 rose 0.55% to 7,629 to finish the week 0.7% higher. The technology sector was among the best performers, rising 1.2% on Friday. Afterpay owner Block rallied 9.8% to 116.44 after it reported sales and user growth ahead of expectations, but shares in investment bank and asset manager Macquarie fell 2.2% to 183.83 after profits fell 32% in the financial year 2024. Local tech darling ProMedicus tracked the rally in US tech shares to hit a record of 113.52, finishing up 1.3%, and enterprise software group WiseTech added 1.2% to $92.27. Lithium miners rose as prices for the battery metal firmed, with Pilbara Minerals climbing 3% to $4.18, and IGO adding 1.9% to $7.92. The Australian dollar added 0.72% to buy 66.10 US and 0.52 UK pounds. Now, the central bank on Tuesday is expected to keep the cash rate at a 12-year high of 4.35%, but it may also reintroduce a softer tightening bias following last week's hotter-than-expected inflation report. Traders are pricing in a 32% of another rate rise in Australia this year, but the majority of economists still believe that the next rate move will be down, albeit later this year or perhaps in 2025. The RBA has already aggressively lifted interest rates by 4.25 percentage points since 2022 to try and get on top of rampant inflation. But the question is it enough? Well, former RBA researcher Peter Tulip said inflation would not fall to the 2.5% midpoint within the two-year forecast horizon based on the current economic outlook. Dr. Tulip, who's now the chief economist at the Center for Independent Studies, said the central bank should lift the cash rate closer to 5% to meet its objectives. But there was a distinction between what the RBA would do and what it should do, he said. Former RBA official Jonathan Keynes agreed with Dr. Tulip that the cash rate should be closer to 5% and said the risks were skewed to inflation not falling to 2.5% in the next 2 years. However, because of the RBA's strong emphasis on keeping the jobs market intact, it was unlikely to raise rates. Dr. Keynes is now the chief economist at Challenger. Instead, he said that he expected the cash rate to stay unchanged this year. What I've been saying for a while is that I think rates were probably too low, but the RBA had a preference for not raising them, and which would mean that they will remain at their current levels for longer. If the central bank held off raising rates, it could ultimately be forced to deliver even more tightening down the track as inflationary pressures became further entrenched in the economy. But this leads to a critical question, which Christopher Joy explored in the AFR. The US Federal Reserve is politically compromised, and it's entirely plausible that the Reserve Bank of Australia suffers from the same problems. This should not come, he said, as a surprise. Central banks subjugating their inflation targets to political imperatives was always going to be the biggest asset pricing risk as we encounter the first bona fide inflation crisis since the 1980s. Fed Chair Jerome Powell clearly wants to do everything he can to avoid adversely affecting President Joe Biden's electoral prospects. And the question is, will the RBA's Michelle Bullock follow the same line? And if you think that sounds hyperbolic, it's the assessment of senior bank traders and considered a credible case among the world's largest, most successful hedge funds. If we weren't in an election year, we would still very much be in a hiking cycle, one US market maker advised clients. Facing a direct existential threat to his leadership from former President Donald Trump, Fed Chair Jerome Powell clearly wants to do everything he can to avoid adversely impacting President Joe Biden's electoral prospects. And in fact, Joy goes on to say that this week was a litmus test of Powell's fidelity to price stability. Rather than appropriately ruling out near-term cuts and warning that rates should climb, as they should, if the data continues to deteriorate, Powell triggered yet another rally in equities and bonds by dismissing the possibility of tightening policy and signaling that he thought the next move was likely down, albeit on a deferred basis. It's pathetic. This is despite significant and repeated upside surprises to US inflation and wages data, which has blown the Fed's dovish forecast out of the water. Of course, Powell has no idea where rates are heading, and he knows it. He just doesn't want to concede this point for fear of the market pricing in some probability of, heaven forbid, rate rises, which would undermine Biden's popularity. If Powell could cut rates to help Biden, he would, one billionaire macro trader said. The RBA is in a similar bind. There is simply no basis for a globally low and unnecessary stimulatory 4.35% cash rate right now, underscored by the fact that its own macro models are telling it that the cash rate should be at 5%, given its estimate of neutral is 3.8%. That is just 0.55% below the current rate. While policy is not remotely restrictive according to the RBA's analysis, which is why trimmed mid inflation has gathered ahead of the 4.1% annualized pace in the March quarter, nowhere near the RBA's 2.5% target, Martin Place is paralyzed by the fear of offending its political masters by publishing unemployment up from its historically skinny 3.8% base. And in fact, elsewhere, economists are urging the federal government to tighten immigration rules to help bring inflation down as the Reserve Bank considers when or if it should start cutting interest rates. And why? Because the surging population growth has exacerbated a housing shortage and put a rocket under rents. And while working migrants reduce labour shortages and dampen wage pressures, which is also a key driver of inflation, economists warn that the larger migration influx is pushing prices higher. Andrew Ticehurst, a senior economist and rate strategist at Nomura, said policymakers need to be more strategic. This means the government has to be more thoughtful about the annual immigration intake and, just as importantly, needs an infrastructure investment program consistent with population growth. But UBS economist George Thanew is calling for an even more radical stance. Unless there's a material policy change, population growth is likely to continue to surprise on the upside, he said. Temporary visas, a leading indicator on migration, are still booming despite the government's adjustments. To illustrate his point, he said that the number of arrivals had exceeded the so-called annual migration caps of between 150,000 and 200,000 in the last couple of months. And with 2.8 million people currently on temporary visas, that's equivalent to over 10% of the population, rent inflation would stay very high, which accounts for the biggest component of the consumer price index. Last week, stronger than expected quarterly inflation data revealed a 7.8% annual rise in rents. That's the highest since 2009 due to the severe mismatch between supply and demand. He estimates that the migration surge would add at least a quarter of a percentage point to CPI and half a percentage point if you include direct and indirect spillovers. I find it hard for the RBA to achieve its goal of 2.5%, he said. And finally, in crypto, Bitcoin was at 63,255, still range-bound, but to an extent mirroring broader financial markets for reasons that we've explained before. So at the end of another volatile and rudderless week, markets remain on edge, waiting for the next big shiny bit of news. Of course, big players benefit from these changes in sentiment, but ordinary investors will be probably rightly more cautious. Expect more rapid changes in trajectory in the weeks ahead, as data will continue to confuse. In the meantime, the credibility of central bankers continues, in my eyes at least, to be diminished, even as more ordinary households are being crushed. And more on that subject in my live stream on Tuesday. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Mate, thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.